What is going on, everybody? Jamie Shaw here on the Absolute Basketball Podcast. Very excited about today's guest, East Carolina head coach Joe Dooley. We go all the way through his background. We talk about his upcoming as a player and then his rise as a coach going at 22, youngest head coach at 29. And then all that type of stuff. We also dive into the East Carolina team, what they have to look forward to, how they're coming back from with protocol and all that type of stuff. But before we dive into it, ask that you please subscribe to this channel. If you would, please rate it 5 stars. And then also leave a comment in the section below what you enjoyed about what Coach Dooley had to say. All of this really helps us within the rankings. It allows these coaches' stories, the stories of these players that we talk about, to get to more people, get to the public even more and all that type of stuff. And we want everybody to know what these guys are talking about. But without further ado, here is East Carolina head coach Joe Dooley on the Absolute Basketball Podcast with Jamie Shaw. Thank you guys very much. What is going on, everybody? Jamie Shaw here on the Absolute Basketball Podcast. Very excited today to have East Carolina head coach Joe Dooley join us on the show. Joe, how's it going?
We're doing great. How are you?
Man, things are good. As we were just talking a little bit off air, just trying to figure it all out, trying to get this rain to go away and get back out in the world of normalcy.
Yeah, it's been the rain doesn't add to getting your spirits a little bit better. And obviously, it's been a very different time. So you're right. We do need to get back to some normalcy.
No doubt. So you played at famed St. Benedict's High School in New Jersey, your 1,100 career point scorer there and all that type of stuff. What was it like growing up there and kind of that area of basketball? You know, you got St. Pat's, St. Benedict's, you had St. Anthony's, all that type of stuff and the toughness that comes with that. What was it like growing up and playing there?
Well, it was a great opportunity. I mean, we got to play against really good competition. You know, Mr. Hurley was the coach at St. Anthony's even then and had a dynasty. You know, he had great players like David Rivers and Kenny Wilson in that era, and then obviously on to Bobby and Danny. But the level of competition was very high. We had a lot of guys in our area that went to play on to play college basketball. Mark Bryant, who was a great player at Seton Hall, played. You know, we all played AAU together, and it was a really good experience. And it got us a lot of exposure, and we were fortunate. A lot of us got scholarships and were able to play in college.
You mentioned the AAU scene. What was the AAU scene like then as compared to how it is now that you see?
We've traveled quite a bit. I mean, I played for Sandy Pione with the Roadrunners, and Sandy's still doing it, if you can believe it. That's how long Sandy's been doing it. You know, but he also has had people like Kyrie Irving have played for him. And we did travel. We went to Boston all the time. We went to Canada. We went to Florida. We did all those type of deals. We didn't go as far west as they'd go now. You know, everybody's figured out to go to Vegas, but we did a lot of traveling, played in the AAU national tournaments, and it was a great experience.
You're able to go on. You're a two-time captain at George Washington in your career there. What type of player were you, and would Coach Joe Dooley recruit player Joe Dooley?
I don't know if I'd recruit me. I like a little more quickness, but I was a solid college player, and was able to play, you know, played in the Atlantic 10, which is a very good league. My senior year, Temple was number one in the country that whole year, and made a lot of great friendships. We still stay in touch, and you know, I do appreciate the opportunity I had at GW.
So you graduated GW in 1988, and you jumped right on with Dennis Felton at the University of South Carolina. Was kind of coaching always the end result for you? Was that always your dream and what you wanted to do?
It was George Felton.
George Felton.
Yep. No, George was I always wanted to. I was fortunate. I grew up across the street from an NBA coach, Richie Adubato, who ended up being the head coach of the Orlando Magic, and it was with the Knicks for a while, and the head coach of the Dallas Mavericks. Grew up right across the street. So when I was at a young age, we would go over to Knicks games. I had probably seen and been to more NBA basketball games than I had been to college games, mm-hmm. especially in my early life. And then earlier years, and then as it went on, as I started getting recruited, I got into the, you know, following and could go to more college basketball games, and I always knew I wanted to coach. I was very fortunate I've been able to do it.
It's a shame I messed up on the South Carolina coach's name. That's where I graduated from. We're from South Carolina, so I all these interviews I do, and it's the South Carolina coach that I mess up on.
Well, we had a really good staff. You know, we had Eddie Payne, who ended up being the head coach of East Carolina, and as well as Oregon State. We had Tubby Smith. Obviously, Tubby's had an unbelievable career. George Felton is now the director of player personnel for the San Antonio Spurs. So I was able to learn from some guys that were real pros.
Absolutely. And then kind of – so you go on to East Carolina. Eddie kind of takes over the Oregon State job. And in 95, you are the youngest Division I head coach in basketball. What was your mindset like kind of getting the head coaching job at 29 years old, moving down that chair?
Well, I think, you know, everybody says they're prepared, and then it hits you, and then there's things that you have to figure out on the fly. And there's also things that, you know, I always tried to pay attention to how George did things and how Coach Payne did things and how Tubby did. And I was fortunate because I was 22 when I got into it, and those guys were in their mid to late 30s, and they were already pros. Mm-hmm. So it was, you know, I was watching, you know, how organizationally they would do things. I played for a very good college coach in John Kuster, who played at North Carolina. So I took some of those things that Coach Kuster had done, and obviously things that George had done. And then you also watch some things that are people in other programs you're doing, and trying to emulate how you emulate the best programs in your league.
So, you know, at 29 years old, while you're a 7-year veteran as a coach, you know, you're only 5 or 6 years maybe older than these kids. How did you develop your voice as the head coach of the program?
Well, I think the first thing was, you know, having, you know, in the recruiting and during the time before, you know, having a relationship with the players, letting them, you know, having an understanding that you don't have all the answers. But I think with those guys, you're right. You know, you're only 7 or 8 years older than some of these guys. And I think from a respect standpoint, having been an assistant here, they knew what they were getting into. There was some familiarity. And then just trying to balance your staff with that also.
So, you know, your time comes to an end at East Carolina. You're the only coach in your tenure to have a winning record at that point in time and all that type of stuff. Do you want to get into the ending there, or you want to just move on?
That's fine. No, I mean, we had a new athletic director that wanted to have his, you know, make a change. Mm-hmm. He did. You know, here's what happens. I moved down the road, and it's the way the business is.
Yeah. Wow, the success that you had there that they hadn't had before, then all of a sudden, but that's another story for another time. Wyoming, New Mexico, and then 10 years at Kansas. How did getting back on the bench in that manner with those type of programs help you become a better head coach that you became down the, you know, that you are currently now?
Well, I think that, you know, I was very fortunate. I went with Fran Fraschilla for 3 years out to New Mexico, and they've got a great basketball following. And Fran's a very good coach and is very organized. I was fortunate after I left there to go to Wyoming with Steve McClain, who had that program up and running. We had really good support, really good teams. And during that process, in a weird way, I'd gotten hooked up with Coach Self about when he was at Illinois. And towards the latter part of my 1 year at Wyoming, Coach and I got connected, and Coach was just happened. It was about the Illinois job, and he ended up taking the Kansas job that spring. Mm-hmm. So I ended up going with Coach to Kansas. I think watching guys do things differently, all very successful, it does give you some different perspective. It also reinforced a lot of things we were doing too.
And then, so, you know, you've coached, as we've established, with some great coaches, Eddie Payne, Fran Fraschilla, George Felton, Bill Self, McClain, all that stuff. And you've taken, I'm sure, pieces from all of them. Every head coach wants to have their stamp on the program. They want to have their identity within their program. What is a Joe Dooley-led identity of a team?
Well, we want to compete in every aspect. And I do think that's something that's, you know, we want guys that, as we try to build this program, or understand that it's more important, or it's bigger than you, and that you can also be part of something that you built. I mean, I talk to the guys about all the time how cool it is to see former players come back and remember the good times, the bad times, the in-between times. But, you know, how do you create a legacy? And I think that's what the great programs do. They create a legacy, and they have the former players involved in the program. They have them around the program, and they take pride in the program.
So after 10 years at Kansas, you get the opportunity at Florida Gulf Coast. What was it about that opportunity that's like, you know what, I'm going to take this?
Well, I think one of the things that Andy had done a really good job. And, you know, obviously they're coming off a Sweet 16 deal. They had a nucleus of guys coming back. I thought it would be a good opportunity. You know, I'd been at KU for 10 years. It would be a good opportunity to do it again. Felt comfortable with it. You know, we had pretty good facilities. Ken Cavanaugh, the AD, gave us an opportunity. And we went down there and we ran with it.
5 years at Florida Gulf Coast, 20 or more games you won every single year. You're the league coach of the year. You're two NCAA tournaments and all that type of stuff. How would you say that you grew from your first stint as a head coach to your second stint?
Well, I think one of the things was this was putting the position I inherited at Florida Gulf Coast. They had a little bit of momentum. And our big concern was to make sure that we kept that momentum going. And, you know, we went to 5 straight postseason tournaments. and kept the buzz going there in town. We did go to a couple NCAA tournaments, a couple NITs. But I do think that it reinforced a lot of things I thought the first time. And obviously, it's you know, a number of years later, you've also learned other things. And the game has changed, as you know. I mean, the game has changed. The rules have changed in a lot of regards. I also think that we figured out we had a nice little niche of the way we recruited guys. You know, we had a good mix of high school kids, and we actually did a really good job of taking some transfers who ended up being some of our better players.
And after the 5 successful years at Florida Gulf Coast, ECU opportunity comes open again. You jump at that and you take it and everything. What went into your mindset to come back to East Carolina?
Well, I think the first thing was when Dave Hart approached me about the job and we talked, his whole thing is we need to make basketball important. And I do think for a long time the program had been neglected. I think there's some things that he provided and John Gilbert and our administration are providing right now that they haven't done for basketball before. They hadn't chartered. They hadn't had training table. They've allowed us to go out with some of the boosters and redo our locker rooms. And, you know, our facilities are very, very nice. But those things hadn't been done before. And it's the only way in order to compete that you can do things. And I think that they've made a decision. They want us to get good, and we need to get good.
And you inherit Jaden Gardner on the roster, and then outside of that, you do a complete overhaul with everything else. What was your game plan coming in this rebuild?
Well, the biggest thing was to get guys that wanted to be here and play basketball. And we had obviously when there's a coaching change, and it was a very weird deal because, as you recall, Coach Lebo resigned in December the year before, so they were essentially they had a little bit of a little things were off the tracks a little bit, mm-hmm. and we had some APR issues we had to resolve. So we've had to sort of create an infrastructure for our guys academically. And then I wanted guys that, you know, that want to be here and want to get – I want to grow the program. Mm-hmm. And we got really young, which is fine, but this is a get-old-and-stay-old league. We've got 11 of our scholarship players are back, you know, this coming year. I do think that they all played a lot of minutes. They learned a lot of things. We lost a lot of close games. And we're hoping we can flip those close games this year.
We mentioned Jaden Gardner earlier. Leading scorer, leading rebounder, all this coming in, all-league player. What are your expectations of him coming off of this into next season?
Well, he led the league in scoring, a second rebound to Precious. I do think he can take another step expanding his range on his jump shot. I mean, we talked about it towards the end of the season. We got to get his right foot forward a little bit more. I do think he's got to have a little bit more of a voice. He's now a junior. He's a very hard-working kid. He's a great leader. He'll end up going down as one of the East Carolina's, you know, greatest players ever. But I think the real way he can make a legacy is getting us back to a postseason. And that's, I think that would be a real thing that we're striving for. And I do think that he'll take another step this year. I mean, hopefully he'll expand his range, but the motor runs all day. He's an unbelievable person. I mean, not a good person. He's a great person. He's one of my favorite guys I've ever coached.
You mentioned you have 11 guys coming back, obviously one of them being Jaden. Who are a couple of the other players that you need big steps for this season in order to make it to that postseason run?
Well, I think Tristan Newton averaged double figures as a freshman, and it's a weird deal. You know, usually, you know, your stats go down in conference. His stats went up in conference, and he's a young guy. He should have been a senior in high school last year. He got better and better as the season went along. I think our freshman class will take a big jump from the freshman to sophomore class. Brandon Suggs averaged about 9 points a game as a freshman. Charles Coleman played a lot of minutes as a freshman, started 20 games. When Luigi DeBow, who was starting the season, broke his foot and was out for it. We had foot surgery, so he was out for the year. I will be interested to see how Tremont Robinson responds. He had a horrific injury in August of last year and didn't get back to late November. I don't think he ever got his confidence or his explosiveness back. So obviously, I'd be interested to see now when we do get back on the court, if he's completely healthy, which we hope he is. So those guys, I think, all make jumps. And then we'll have a little bit more depth. J.J. Miles played much better at the end of the year. And as a team collectively, we have to shoot the ball a lot better. We shot 28 from three, which is deplorable. So we need to get that number up.
And in the recruiting this year, you made quite the splash. Obviously, you had Fifi Kwanza, who's been committed for over a year, and then you brought in Noah Farrakhan as well, which is where the splash kind of came from. What can you say about this class that you have coming in, and what are your expectations of those guys off the rip?
Well, I think that one thing I think with Noah, I think guys will like playing with him because he's a good passer. Mm-hmm. And I think he's got an advantage in this regard that he's played on really good teams before, so he's used to playing with other guys. You know, sometimes you get a guy that averages 30 points a game and he's never passed the ball, and now it's you got to get him, you know, recalibrated a little bit. And I do think that he'll be able to make an immediate impact. I think his athleticism helps in the, on the perimeter. I really like Fifi's potential. I mean, I think he's a shot-blocking, rim-running, high-motor guy. And it also gives us three centers. You know, you can go out there and run guys at you by committee because you'll have Charles Coleman back. You'll have Fifi. You'll have Lucci DeBow. Last year we had hoped to redshirt Edra Luster, and then we got guys hurt. We didn't redshirt him. So we'll probably redshirt Edra this year. So it just gives us some frontline depth.
So we just went through the 2022 call date. You're able to first initiate 2022's contact, all that kind of stuff. What is your strategy kind of going into that day and in that time frame?
Well, obviously prioritizing the guys that we want the most early. We were fortunate because our 21 class, we were essentially done almost for the entire year with our 20 class. So we saw a ton of 21s and 22s. So that we felt like that was great because, you know, the way recruiting is now, and you see it all the time, there are a lot of coaches calling kids that they haven't seen play yet and offer. I mean, it's been interesting to watch from the outside. I mean, we've seen a handful of guys that I know some of these schools have not seen play except on tape. And I'm not smart enough just to watch guys on tape. I need to see them in person. But it was trying to prioritize, especially the state, guys that we had seen, guys that the assistants had seen, and try to get them on the phone, just let them know of our interest and talk about, you know, I think there's so much uncertainty among the recruits also. Is there going to be AAU season? Isn't there going to be AAU season? Are we going to play? Are the coaches going to be allowed to come play? I think they're all asking questions, and the sad thing for all of us, we don't have answers. But I do think there's a little anxiety, especially by the 21 class. With the 22 class, I think they're a little bit more mm-hmm. – obviously, they're a little bit younger, and they're probably not as worried about it as much.
So, obviously, we're just coming back, and we're easing back in off of quarantine and all that type of stuff. For a coach like yourself who's really into developing players and really into development and stuff, you haven't been able to have your hands on the players these last couple of months. How did you handle quarantine, and how did you go about that?
Well, I think the first thing we had to do was making sure our guys were okay. We had guys with all sorts of access, either really good access or no access to things, and our strength coach had body weight workouts, and obviously want them to be safe in that because you don't want them to get hurt. But we had some guys, you know, I think it was amusing. A couple of the guys were almost complaining about playing outside. And I was thinking when I was growing up, playing inside was a luxury. I mean, you know, we were, well, man, we can play inside. We're living large today. These guys were actually went outside and played. And I think that most importantly, we have, you know, all of our players are safe. Their families are safe. And then, you know, it will be interesting. We're going to have to ease into this because I think there's going to be a little bit of a transition, obviously, with getting guys back, having them tested and keeping them safe.
So we mentioned that a little bit going into guys are coming back on campus now and there's a plan kind of attack. What's y'all's plan of attack at East Carolina for the team coming back on campus and getting back into the season?
Well, we're going to have guys come back and they're tested every Tuesday to begin with during the off season. So we'll have them tested, and then they have a protocol if someone does test positive. You know, we're going to try to keep in smaller groups right now on the floor. You know, they're going to get their temperature taken when they come into the facility. They have some protocol for that. We're going to sanitize the basketballs after the workout. But there's going to be, like I, you know, we all know that we can take all these precautions. There's just so many variables. I mean, you might not catch it at the court. You could catch it at the grocery store or at the 7-Eleven or any of the other situations. But we're going to give as much opportunity for our guys to stay safe as possible.
And then also coming off this pandemic too, there's a lot of other stuff going on in the world today with the murder of George Floyd going on in Minnesota and all that type of stuff. What was the response and how did y'all gather as a team coming off of that and letting everybody kind of be heard and talking about it?
Well, we Zoomed, and I think the biggest thing is it's time for coaches and I think society to listen. I mean, I asked our guys what their thoughts were, and you listen because we can all have opinions. We can all have, you know, all those type of deals, but we don't know how other people feel. And I think sometimes you need to let them say what they feel, take it in, think about it, and then collectively as a group come together and have some solutions and some discussions. I mean, these discussions aren't always going to be easy, but that's okay. I mean, we always talk about it. You got to stay uncomfortable. And when you're uncomfortable, that's usually when you get better. And I think our society right now is uncomfortable, which will allow us to get better.
And then kind of wrapping things up here, what is one phrase that you heard early on that you've kind of carried along with you at every stop that you've had, just going throughout life? What's a phrase that you heard early on? What was the circumstances surrounding it, and what is that phrase?
Well, there's one. The pessimist complains about the wind. The optimist expects it to change. The leader adjusts the sails. I mean, so, you know, there's going to be things that pop up all the time. And I can be a little negative at times, a little pessimistic. I can be very optimistic. But then it's coming down to how do you figure out what's best and what's the best solution? I mean, we can all figure out we have a flat tire. How do we fix the flat tire?
Absolutely. Coach, thank you so much for taking time here. It's been awesome to kind of get to know you and talk to you and let these people hear your words and all that stuff. I really appreciate it. I'm very excited to see what you're building over there at East Carolina.
Be safe. Go Pirates.
Thank you.